Welcome to the Sensuality Empowerment Show. I am your host, Sharon Hoffman. I am a trained and certified sex, love, and relationship coach. My mission is to empower people to come back to self-love, connection, and exquisite pleasure by embodying their creativity and sexuality. This show is an opportunity to dive deep into all my favorite topics around sex, love, relationships, spirituality, mindfulness, and so much more. Subjects that some of you might find taboo, shameful, or just too embarrassing to talk about. I have the absolute pleasure to interview guests from all over the world, bringing their nuggets of wisdom and insights so you feel empowered, inspired, and supported. Happy New Year, beautiful humans, 2019, here we come. I am so glad to see the back of 2018. It was such a roller coaster ride for me, and not me alone. It was a big year of growth and transformation, addressing old wounds and shifting through limiting beliefs so I could step up and set a solid and loving foundation moving forward. I feel this year is going to bring a lot of magic for people. I definitely fell into my creative juices and have shifted my focus to bringing more peace and acceptance into my life. And how does that look? For me, it's about being more playful and not taking life too seriously. This is my first episode for the year. I have taken my time coming back to these interviews, spending more time with loved ones and taking a bit of a break, but I am so roaring to go and look forward to sharing with you all the wonderful guests I have the pleasure to interview. Today's interview is with another beautiful soul I have been following with a lot of admiration. I recently connected with Tim, a man who's making a huge impact in our community. Tim was dedicated to his career as a Thai boxer. He was competing at high level, which saw him win lightweight titles fighting within Australia, Russia and Thailand. However, after a severe neck injury, which saw him, end his career as a Thai boxer, Tim went into his own deep transformational space, coming from a life of passion and purpose to a dark depression, which saw him embark on a beautiful, powerful journey of doing plant medicine and shamanic practices to guide him to this path of being of service to others through his workshops, retreats, and cacao ceremonies. Tim has a passion for guiding men to dive deep into reconnecting with their inner warrior, their innate masculine essence, through sacred sexuality, and guiding them to embody balance through their primal warrior energy in a healthy way, connecting back to earth, back to their core roots, so they can lead from their heart. You are going to love this discussion. Hearing how Tim is able to get a group of men together, helping them to release any suppressed fear, aggression, or emotions that they have been suppressing, allowing them to come into a place of feeling safe in a container that he provides so they can do this in a controlled and healthy way. I have to say, this conversation brought up some emotions and memories of my own childhood and journey to awakening my wild woman archetype. I was ashamed and suppressed my wild woman because I was told that women don't behave this way. And it got me thinking, it's been some time since I have come into my embodiment of wild woman. So I'm going to get curious and see how I can integrate her into my life. This is going to be interesting, so watch this space. Tim shares how powerful the cacao plant is, and his ceremony is an opportunity for people to connect to spirit. What you can expect at one of his cacao ceremonies and the beautiful messages these ceremonies can bring for someone, especially if you come into an intention of receiving. You are going to love hearing of Tim's journey to walking this path of his inner warrior and be totally inspired by his dedication to helping others step into this path too. So without further ado, I present you with the man himself. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Sharon, how you doing?
Good, thank you. I want to take the opportunity to say much gratitude for coming on to my show this afternoon. I am so excited to dive deep into the work that you do. I just want to start by saying, wow, what a fascinating background that you have. I am in total admiration for the work that you do in the community, especially the men's work that you are doing, you know, holding the sacred space for men to come out and really learn to live by their heart. And, you know, you're never going to be able to move away from our busy minds, but really coming from a place of heart opening. So I just want to say thank you for this work that you are sharing in our community.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. It's deeply received. And thank you so much for inviting me on and giving me this opportunity to come and speak and to share the work that I do and to spread the love. So thank
you. Yeah, I'm always about spreading the love and watching you spread your love, especially on social media. I mean, that's where I actually came across you initially, and then I realized that we have some connections with some, you know, mutual friends, and then watching your journey evolve has been so beautiful. And I can see that you have a deep passion for guiding people into themselves. And that's what we're going to talk about today, the men's work. So first of all, I want to know, how did you actually come to walking this path?
Cool. kind of goes back a long time, but I guess like I've always had this calling to help people in a certain way, to almost like remember themselves. Like I began personal training when I was 17. But during that space, I was also competing in Muay Thai and ended up competing at quite a high level in Muay Thai over the space of about 8 years, and won Australian title and state titles, and had the opportunity to represent Australia over in Russia and Thailand at the World Games. And
wow.
But so I end up with a
that's
really
where you get your physique. And just to clarify, is that Thai boxing?
Thai boxing. Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. The raw style of fighting.
Yeah, wow.
It's absolutely incredible martial arts to get involved in. And there's actually a lot of spirituality that's involved in, especially when you're over in Thailand and you're living with the Thais and seeing how they do it over there and just really embracing it and embodying that. I woke up with a neck injury one morning where I had three discs that had popped out of my neck, and one had hit my spinal cord and jammed my C7 nerve. So I lost all the feeling down my left arm, and the left side of my body was just shaking nonstop for about 8 or 10 hours. I ended up getting surgery about 5 weeks after that, and I didn't exactly want to get surgery, but there was no other kind of option for me at that stage. And I kind of look back, I'm like, oh, if I knew what I knew now, then I definitely wouldn't have gone down there. But it's definitely happened for a reason. And that injury actually was the catalyst for my direction in life or what I'm doing now. But after I received that that neck injury and the surgery, it healed the part that was initially injured, but then after surgery I received extra nerve pain that just goes through my back, and that was about 6 or 7 years ago, and it still happens now. So and that set me down into a really deep downward spiral into depression, and I was suicidal. And I was just not in a good state, and had a massive loss of identity crisis. Like, I identify myself as this fighter. And then when that was taken away with me, I was just like, who am I? And what is my purpose in life? And I'd gone from training 6 days a week, like 2 or 3 hours each session, like twice a day, to not being able to move and just having to lay flat on my back. And it was definitely a difficult time in my life to kind of get through. And I got to a point where I was just not in a good state, and I decided that I'd heard about ayahuasca, so I decided to go to the jungle to drink ayahuasca to help heal what I was going through. I didn't want to talk to a psychologist or psychiatrist or a counselor or anything like that, and I was just knew that these plants were going to heal me and to help me. And so that was like just over 4 years, maybe 5 years ago, that I went on my first eye trip. And that really just, I was expecting to experience a lot of darkness and a lot of like turmoil based on what I'd read and watched on documentaries. But I was just filled with an immense amount of self-love and bliss. And it was like, it was just rewiring neurological pathways inside of my brain, and taking me out of these pain pathways or these depressed states. And actually, on my first trip with my dad, my old man came with us, and we sat. We spent 4 weeks in the jungle together, and we sat 8 times together, and we had such a deep healing. Not during the ceremonies, but it was actually on a workshop that was led in between the ceremonies, that we had a really deep healing. So during this time, I was still like really questioning what I was meant to be doing, and I started getting some guidance from the plants. And then at the end of the trip, I sat with San Pedro a couple of times and had one more ayahuasca ceremony. And during that time, I started, you know, having visions of the way my life was going to head. And actually had my last San Pedro Huachuma journey, I was connected with Mapacha, which is the sacred jungle tobacco, and it shot me off into the spirit realm. And when I was up there, they said to me, like, you are to become the bridge between the worlds. And when I came back into my body, I started seeing spirits, I started seeing energy, started hearing voices, and started really connecting to the unseen world. And then when I came back, I went through like a spiritual awakening. That's what I call it now. But at the time, it felt like it was like a psychosis. And I was just so blessed to have my mom, who's an absolutely incredible healer. She's very, very shamanic herself. And she guided me through the experience to help me kind of get through it. But through all of these things that were happening to me, it made me be like, well, what the hell is happening to me in my life? And I needed to find answers for what was going on. And then one of my darkest moments, I said to Spirit, I said, if you teach me to get through what I'm going through, then I'll share my message with the world. And it was just like a snowball effect after that, after I truly, truly surrendered and felt in this ease and grace. Then it was just meeting teacher after teacher and just coming into contact with different courses and workshops and trainings, and which really led to me to the work that I'm doing now. And actually, one of my Huachuma journeys I had on my first trip, it showed me to link up like electronic music with sacred sounds and sitting in ceremony, and also to be doing work with men. And and Huachuma is the, you know, grandfather spirit. It's masculine spirit. It's actually the divine masculine that's coming through you, and it's like the light of consciousness that is the light of the cactus is coming in to illuminate all the darkness and allowing it to kind of come through. But it took a couple of years for it all kind of come to fruition. And I was doing work with a with a tantra teacher over here in Perth, and one of the women just asked me one day, where's the stuff for men? And I'd been sitting on this idea for like a course for men for a while, and it just, that was like the little push that I needed to kind of bring it out into the world. And when I was kind of formulating, I was like, well, what's the been the most fundamental things that have changed me as that helped me kind of step more into my masculine power? And that was learning about the archetypes, learning about inner child healing, sacred sexuality, into shadow work. And I put it all into a course called Return of the King, and that was the beginning of my journey working with men. And I'd done some men's work before and seen different pieces, and I kind of found that a lot of the men's work that was out there was more about entering into the masculine space through the feminine. And I could see that men were losing that deep masculine core and then getting lost in the in their own feminine energy without finding that balance that's, that serves them to the highest as well. So yeah, that's how the men's stuff started. And then over time I had another calling to create another course called Invictus, which is based on the warrior, and kind of found that most men that I've come across and work with and that I've seen, they either are overly expressed in the shadow of the warrior through destruction, through violence, through harm, through domination. Or they're suppressed it so deeply that it's no longer felt. They've just been castrated either by their partners, by the world, or by themselves, and they just don't actually have this primal, innate masculine energy that's so useful for men. And to watch men step into that masculine space of the warrior and of the wild man is just, is absolutely amazing. And when they learn to harness that in a healthy way, and to be balanced in that, it's a very, very grounding energy for men to be in, and allows their partners to drop deeper into their feminine space when they're holding a more sacred container of the masculine for themselves.
Yeah, beautiful. Oh, wow. That's such a beautiful share and journey that you have embarked on. Have you always felt this innate knowing or calling that you were supposed to do this work, or did it only come through via medicine?
I've always had this innate knowing that I was meant to be helping people. I didn't really know what platform that was going to be on. I remember even being at school, and when I was younger, always wanting to help people. But when I was growing up, when I was really young, I was abused sexually by another boy, and then later on by a woman, and experienced a lot of death when I was younger as well, and then bullied quite heavily through maybe year 40, year 6, year 7. So I grew up, I had a lot of like suppressed emotions and energy within myself, and always had this really, really kind heart, but because I'd been hurt so deeply, I would lash out in anger as well. And I'd formed my own narrative of what it means to be a man. And to me, if I could beat you up in a fight, then I was more manly than you. It didn't matter about anything else. Like if I could bash it, and that was it. And that was, and then when, once the fighting had stuff had kind of stopped, I'd always had this like wanting to help. And I just never knew how it was going to come. And, through fighting, like I actually loved fighting and loved all the gifts and the amazing times that, that I had while I was fighting, and all the people I got to meet and the places I got to go. But I was never felt fully fulfilled in that as well. And I was getting these injuries along the way, and I was always like, the universe is just testing me to see how bad do I want it. Like, what am I willing to go through to get to a, where I need to be? And it took like the big old Mack truck smash to really put me on my path. And, and it took a while after that because I was just so down on life and I was just like, what's the point in all of this? And yeah, I was just kept being guided and guided into this. And then I was also working away on a mine site after I hurt my neck, and a little bit before that as well, managing the gyms up on a mine site. And when I'd come back from the jungle the second time, off the first time, I actually went back to work, and I ended up just turning back into this person I didn't want to be. And I realized like how sensitive I'd become, even though I was super sensitive before, but I just become even more sensitive. So I made the decision then there that I was just no longer going to be that person anymore. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew I couldn't be in that position anymore.
Yeah.
So I quit work, moving back into my parents' house, and I had no money, and but I just knew that's what I had to do. And through that separation and just almost going all in and giving everything into the universe, into spirit, everything just opened up for me, and it continually does so as well. And the plants have been a massive teacher for me. Working with Kambo has been a massive teacher for me.
Yeah.
And being in a sacred relationship with my partner, Sammy, has been a massive teacher and guide for me as well.
Yeah. Beautiful. How do you define, it's thrown around quite a lot, you know, divine masculine. How do you define that?
I see the masculine is pure consciousness resting in stillness, and the feminine is the flow, creativity, it's life, it's everything else. And so the sacred masculine, or the divine masculine, so I use the term sacred masculine.
I like
the sacred masculine to me is the sacred container which holds the divine feminine. And the sacred masculine is about creating more depth and stillness within oneself. Mm. And we both, men and women, have both the masculine and feminine energies. And so when we say masculine and feminine, or the sacred masculine, sacred feminine, or divine feminine, we tend to think, like we say divine feminine, we think of women. We say sacred masculine, we tend to think of men.
Yeah.
But the sacred masculine is just the sacred container, that which holds the divine feminine. And now with the rise of the divine feminine that's been happening over the years, the divine feminine can only rise as deep as the sacred masculine can hold her. And the sacred masculine is really being brought up, especially in men, to search deep within. And so many men are being called into this work and to go and journey deep within, because they're feeling this depth that's trying to come up within themselves. And the sacred masculine is just teaching us pure presence, and it's teaching us to hold, to contain without controlling. So it's just the support network that's coming through.
Yeah.
And I had an interesting journey with Wachirama on my last journey, on my last Wachirama journey, one before that, about the new paradigm of masculine energy that's coming through at the moment. And it's just this full upgrade of genetic structure and of the DNA on a cellular level that's happening on an unconscious level across the globe. It's happening super, super quick.
Yeah. I'm really feeling that too. And, you know, people have a perception of, you know, this masculine, what masculine energy is. And, you know, I was always brought up in thinking that my masculine was probably I wouldn't say too powerful, but my masculine was very much in presence. Like it really ran the show. When I say masculine back then, I referred it to as, you know, the push, the drive, the go, you know, not coming into presence and stillness. I was an overachiever. I was very much operating from my total headspace constantly. It wasn't until I went on to my journey of, you know, discovering my beautiful feminine power that I realized that it's not so much my masculine was in control, is it? They weren't dancing in harmony. They weren't in flow with each other. And I think there's a lot of people out there that just don't understand how to combine these two energies so they flow and dance together. You know, we're either suppressed in the masculine or suppressed in the feminine and don't know how to work with both energies.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And what I've noticed as well is that the masculine energy can be presented in unhealthy traits and be presented in healthy traits as well. And I've also seen as well through women a lot of unhealthy masculine traits coming through, which really causes the emasculation of men.
Yes.
Because they've had their feminine energy suppressed so much that their masculine's taken over to protect their own feminine, that it comes out in these, you know, unconscious or unhealthy ways.
Yeah.
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 But we need to keep that balance with the masculine and the feminine energies in both men and women. So like if we're too much in the feminine and we have no masculine like direction, then you're just a feather blowing in the wind. And if you're too masculine, you have no feminine flow, then you become too rigid. And you're just like a robot, just can't connect in.
Yeah.
So it's super important. And when we when I work with men, like I teach men to how to drop deep into their masculine essence, but also how to express themselves through their feminine energy as well, which is super important. And there's no like one size fits all with this masculine feminine. Some men might be more masculine than other men, and some men might be more feminine in that nature as well. So it really depends on, so you know, you can be more masculine in your work, but you might be more feminine in the bedroom. But when it comes to partnerships, whether it's a homosexual partnership or a male and female partnership, there needs to be polarity within the relationship. Because if you're both sitting in your masculine, then you're just two best friends.
Yes.
And there's going to be no sexual like sparks or anything like that flying around. So it's learning how to, because you might have a partner that's, like say, for example, like if my partner, if she's really pushing and striving in her work, then she'll be sitting more in her masculine energy as well. So we all need to know like when to flow in between each and every single part of ourselves. And it's not just saying purely in our masculine, it's not just saying purely in our feminine, it's learning the flow and the dance. Like when I'm running my cacao ceremonies and in that sacred space, like I'll set up the container so that I've got the sacred masculine holding me, and my partner will sit in really divine presence sitting right next to me, which allows me to drop even deeper into my own feminine flow. So I can connect so deep into spirit. I can connect deep into cacao. I can connect deep the collective energy of the group that's coming. And I'll know exactly what sounds to play to journey them through for that ceremony. And it's knowing how to, you know, flow in between everything and uniting unity consciousness and bringing it all together.
So beautiful. Working with men, Tim, what are you finding are the common themes, or you know, the fears or the resistance that men are coming to you with?
It's different each time. Men are definitely seeking more and deeper connection with their partners. Some men are coming through and they feel like they can't express themselves wholly and completely to their partner because then their partner judges them for what they're saying or they're bringing through to. So then they're seeking better communication skills. And some men are just wanting to have a safe space where they can allow themselves to be seen, allow themselves to be vulnerable without any kind of judgment. As well. And a lot of men are just wanting to be better husbands, better partners, better fathers. And there's this almost like an innate knowing within themselves that something, you know, isn't gelling with them where they are in their life. And they're in this seeking, this place of seeking where they're just knowing that they've suppressed something or that they're not living up to their greatest potential.
Yeah.
And they're the kind of guys that tend to come in. They're feeling like there's more to be done.
Yeah.
Or they're feeling like there's something buried that they need to relate.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that feeling too. And also I find with men, a lot of men have or feel this lack of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know where they stand in society. They feel really lost because they've spent perhaps a majority of their life trying to work themselves into being this successful husband or partner or, you know, someone at this career man. You know, they've put all this emphasis and focus onto trying to be this identity that actually hasn't really been them the whole time. So they feel so lost. And I'm finding that with a lot of the men that I was working with last year, that's where they were sitting. They were just really confused. They just didn't know where they didn't know who they were as men.
Yeah. It's one of the things that we work through is ego purpose versus soul purpose. And for a man to be on purpose is that's like his life force.
Yeah.
And him not being connected to his purpose is like a man not being connected to his balls or him not connected to his deep sense of self. And it's absolutely paramount for a man to know his purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And his purpose can be anything. It just it's not always what the work front is.
Yeah.
His purpose could be his fatherhood, his purpose could be being a provider for his family. And it's when they understand what their deeper purpose is in life, everything starts to shift. Like their relationships will shift, their work life will shift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So I would love to understand when you're working with men, what sort of embodiment practices or tools are you working with to help them come back into their heart center? Is it a lot of the tantra work that you do with these men?
No, not so much tantra anymore. A lot of strong guidance from, it was three different ceremonies. One was Aya, one was Kamba, and one was Pedro. And they all said, like, that's not your path to do tantra, but your path is the shamanic path.
Cool.
And so I kind of let a lot of we do a couple, like, some, like, eye-gazing type of stuff and the sublimation exercises we go through.
Yeah.
But the embodiment practices that we do, one that I found for both men and women, but for men as well, to allow them to drop into their emotional body and to release unresolved emotional core wounds and trauma is breath work. And style of breath work that I was showing through ayahuasca. And we do, like, in this Invictus course, we're going to be doing four really deep breath work sessions. So, like, 60 minutes of deep connected breath in through the mouth, out through the mouth.
Love it.
Breathing into different parts of the body.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's been absolutely amazing. Another one that we do is I get the guys wrestling every single session at the start. So we start off with some really basic techniques and some basic self-defense techniques. So standing up and then on the floor, and then by the end of it they're having all out wrestles and there's something innate in a man that when they wrestle and they have that physical contact with another man, it creates like quite a deep bond and allows his masculine energy to come to the forefront. And it does two things to men. So some men have never been in a fight ever in their life. And I'm pretty sure it was in Fight Club and they were talking about, it was saying that every man needs to be in a fight. And I firmly believe that, like, not to go on the street and have a big punch up, but, you know, to in a controlled environment, whether it's sparring, whether it's like jiu-jitsu or whatever kind of martial arts, but to have that physical contact is you really start to understand yourself. So two things: some men have never been in a fight, so it brings up a lot of shit for them in that space.
I bet
it might bring up, especially when they're being pinned on the ground. And sometimes we've got like 2-on-1 wrestles, or sometimes it's 3-on-1 wrestles where the guy's trying to get away from 3 guys coming at them. And so some guys just brings up a lot of like fear, And some guys, they can breathe through that fear. So fear is just excitement without the breath. And when they can learn to breathe through that fear and breathe into themselves and they pass through that fear, this primal energy will come into them and they'll start to have that sense of that primal nature that they've maybe suppressed from a long, long time ago. Yeah. And some guys that have come in, they've been in countless street fights, and they feel, and then it's for them, it's learning how to control their own anger and learn how to control their own aggression.
Yeah.
So we're told as men that anger is bad and aggression is bad.
Mm.
Anger is an emotion, just like sadness is, like joy is, like happiness is. Anger is a reflective tool. I call it like a secondary emotion as well. But anger is also showing us where our boundaries might have been crossed, where our needs might not have been met. We're trying to protect ourselves. We start to get
love
anger.
That. Yeah.
And sometimes the anger is also a secondary emotion. It's covering up sadness that's underneath. So it's trying to protect us from what else is around. So as soon as we get into anger, we're getting into our fight or flight reflex, and our reptilian brain is starting to fire up.
Yeah.
And then when we speak about aggression, we're also told that aggression is bad. Because the way that we've always seen it is through someone beating up someone else, through domestic abuse, through sexual abuse, through bullying. But aggression, when it's controlled aggression, it's channeled in the right way, it can be very, very, a very, very useful tool. So, for example, like if you look at Albert Einstein, he was very aggressive in his approach to his mathematics and his science stuff that he was doing. And when we speak about football, you would say, oh, that was an aggressive play. And we can be aggressive in our approach as it's like controlled aggression, as in we're not harming anyone else, but we're being aggressive in our approach to work. Then we're coming with a lot of drive and a lot of not force, but we're getting right into it, we're getting stuck into it. But it's when aggression, when we want to lash out at someone else, that's when we need to learn how to breathe and to find compassion within that aggression. Because compassion and aggression, they can't be in the same room at the same time. So one way of coming out of that aggression is to find compassion for the person that you're being aggressive towards.
Yeah.
And that will help to drop that back down. So we also do some like somatic releasing as well in some of the like Osho meditation style of practices.
Shake it
out. Osho. We go into like eye gazing, which brings up, that's the first thing that the guys do when they come in, is we get them all eye gazing. And that brings up a lot of stuff in guys as well. And for that one reason is that mostly guys would, if you locked eyes with another man, especially at a pub, you're either like sizing him up or pretty much every single man or most men have this irrational fear of homophobia.
Yeah.
And they think that if they connect with a man through the eyes, and that either means that they want to fight or they want to fuck them. So it's showing men that they can connect through the heart space, through the consciousness, in this space without anything else going on. And it's allowing those old belief patterns to dissolve. And it also creates quite a deep bond through men. What are they? Trying to think of what else we do. Some other ones I just can't think of them at the moment. But yeah, we do quite a few embodiment practices.
Yeah, beautiful.
To bring them back into their bodies and to feel their own power.
Yeah. So beautiful. I love the wrestling and I suppose, you know, dropping into that place of healthy aggression or fighting or whatever you want to call it, that emotion that you just, those emotions that you just covered, because there is a lot of suppression, not just for men, but also women. I know, you know, speaking for myself, when I was growing up, I was constantly having tantrums as a child, really bad tantrums. If I wasn't getting my needs met, as you just mentioned, or if I wasn't getting my own way, which was a lot of the time, I would have these major tantrum attacks, and my parents would always be pulling me aside and smacking me or telling me that you just can't do that. It's not normal. Like, you just can't have those, you can't, it's this aggression. You can't behave in that manner. Girls don't do that. And it wasn't until I started to go on my journey of, you know, exploring my own, you know, archetypes of wild woman, you know, with Eros, with dancing Eros, that I was able to tap into all that suppressed emotion of wild woman. And fuck, I loved it. I loved reconnecting to that part of myself because that was a big part of myself I had just really blocked out. I actually had forgotten I had all these tantrums and behaved like that as a child because I thought it was bad. But if my parents had only educated me and told me how to release in a healthy way, maybe I wouldn't be carrying, I wouldn't be holding on to this trauma in my body, this physical, emotional trauma that I had, you know, carried into my adulthood if, you know, I was able to be able to work in that way. Like, you're teaching people. That's awesome. So cool.
100%. Like, from what you were saying, so, like, when we're young, we start to become socialized and we start to discern what brings us love and what brings us pain and punishment. And then we'll create a split within our own consciousness. And like, if you were brought up saying that girls don't be angry, girls don't throw tantrums, and that's part of the press, and you push that so deep into your unconscious, and then you might have even found, like, as you grew up, that would have come out through unhealthy ways, whether like you were drinking or
no unhealthy,
like through like passive aggressiveness as well. And then, and that's like part of the shadow work is bringing those shadows to light and back into that path of
whole. Well, how I actually, how it manifested for me actually was I used to attract men who had those traits that had that aggression, that anger, that, you know, that I, that that's how it manifests for me, is that I would attract men that had those traits that were over-expressive in that way, went way too, they pushed the boundary way too far.
Yeah.
And on to me.
Yeah. Have you read a book called Romancing the Shadow before?
No.
It's an absolutely incredible book on shadow work for anyone that wants to dive deeper into shadow work. And they use a lot of the archetypal goddesses and I think some of the gods as well to describe, not so, some people say like your shadow is anger, but they will say like your shadow is Athena. But they talk about like the different shadows that come up, and one of them is the relational shadow. So what you've suppressed in yourself will be the partner that you attract, and because you suppress that wildness, you'll attract someone that's like over the top wild. And they're just expressing your, it's like a complete mirror to your own suppressed shadows. It's like an absolutely incredible book. They go into like shadows that you get when you get engaged, when you start dating, shadows you get once you become married, and shadows that just like form throughout your whole life. It's really interesting. Romancing the Shadow. Yeah, I think it's by Connie Zweig. I think that's how you spell the name.
Okay. I'll put this in the show notes as well if people are interested in learning or wanting to work with a shadow. I felt last year was a big year of meeting my shadow and bringing light to my shadow and my ego. Actually, I worked with my ego probably a year ago when I did a lot of journeying with San Pedro. So, you know, grandfather really showed me, really brought the ego to my view. And fuck, that was full on. But it was so beautiful to actually see her in that light. And like you mentioned, just offering that compassion that she needed. Because actually, it's actually not darkness. It's pure light. My shadow is my lightness.
100%, yeah. We always have this, like, preconceived idea that the shadow is, or we talk about darkness or something that's evil and whatnot, but it's like our innate essence. It's our, like, these gifts that we can harness when we integrate our shadows. So for example, like if you've fully suppressed your wildness and your own anger, and then now you brought it to light and you've integrated that into your being and you've accepted and loved that part of yourself, and now that's in part of, like, you've gone through the integration process and now it's embodying into yourself. And like, you're going to be able to set better boundaries. You're going to be able to connect deeper into the earth through like the wild woman.
Yeah.
And you're just going to have more, you're just going to emanate this more powerful, radiant energy, that goddess energy. It's absolutely incredible. I love shadow work. It's
Yeah, me too. It's incredibly confronting for me. But I know it's magic at the same time. There's just so much power in that.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So and plus are you up?
No, go, sorry.
I was gonna say it's also a hard pill to swallow. When you like look in the mirror and you realize some shit that you do that's like not in alignment or that you don't like about yourself, when you first see that, you're like, oh shit.
Mm.
It's hard to swallow. So, yeah. But I honor anyone that steps on that path of the shadow, because it's confronting but fulfilling journey. Yeah,
absolutely.
Hero's journey for sure.
Yeah. So when you when you're working with men that are in relationships, whether it's marriage or have a beloved, and they start this journey of, you know, beautiful deep self inquiry. Do you see the transformation not happening just within, but also do you see the difference, what it makes with perhaps their partner also changing in consequence?
Yeah, actually, one of the most favorite things is when their partners message me and they say, thank you so much for helping blah, blah, for that they've done, because they're like, I can see so much. And I've also had some guys' best mates reach out to me and say thank you so much for helping my mate. Like, I can see how much he's shifted and changed from being doing work with you. And that's like, that just absolutely lights me up when I hear things like that, for sure.
And you probably see the opposite too, that I know I was seeing a lot of it last year, the men that I was working in and coaching, is that when they actually step into their truth, into their true masculine, that actually they leave what's not serving them. And a big part of it was actually, you know, letting go of their loved one.
Yeah, for sure. So definitely gone through that as well. And definitely guys that have left jobs that weren't serving them as well. Mm. And the relationship is also super hard for them as well. So a lot of men, they, you know, the old saying that you always marry your mother and
or your father.
These guys, yeah, or your father.
Yeah.
And so they've, you know, projected their mother onto their partners.
Mm.
And so they feel like they're needing certain things, aspects, like their mother from their partner.
Yeah.
That when they start to do a lot of deep inner work and they start to, you know, heal their own inner child, they start to bring their own self-love and self-worth, and that they're realizing they're no longer needing that motherly validation from their partner. Mm. And they come to a place of, well, I no longer need you. Do I still want you?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a no for them. And sometimes I've had guys as well that have come from abusive relationships from their partners, which is something that is generally not really spoken about, is men being physically, you know, hit by their partners, or being emotionally abused by them as well. And then for men to step out of that as well. Mm. And there's definitely both sides of it too. So that happens both ways as well. And some women as well. And tend to find as well, like if one partner's doing a lot of work and the other partner's not really doing any kind of work, that can really separate the two as well. And I have women reach out to me and they ask, how can I support my partner during this process?
Yeah.
Or they'll say, I really want my partner to come and do some work with you. And it can kind of come through two different ways, because the same as women don't want to be fixed by their partners, men also don't want to be fixed by their partners as well. But one of the best ways that a woman can support her partner is by developing and strengthening her own inner masculine to the point where she can also hold space for her boyfriend, her husband, or whatever.
Yeah.
And just providing a space, because at the same time, like, we all want to try and help each other, and sometimes that can fall into the fixer role.
Mm-hmm.
But when, as a partner, if you're wanting to support your man and he's in a really emotional space, just ask him what he needs to speak, and you tap into your intuition for what he needs.
Yeah.
And that doesn't always mean by trying to fix a problem, just allow him to be heard for what he needs to say. And the feminine in the man has been suppressed so, so deeply for so long. And it's not just like our generation, it's ancestral. It's a long, long line, a paternal line, that this feminine energy in the man has been so deeply suppressed. So sometimes you need to treat a man's feminine as if it was like a four-year-old little girl.
Yeah.
And she's going to have tantrums, and she's not going to know what she wants. And it's just holding that space through love. And something, a beautiful thing my partner done for me when I was going through really bad depression and also suicidal, was that she was energetically holding me to a higher place than where I was. Mm. And that was allowing me, that was inviting me into this higher vibration as well.
Oh, I really felt that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this can happen on both sides, both men and women, that when either come back from a retreat or back from a workshop, that their partner still holds them at the same vibration or the same frequency or the same behavioral traits that they were living in prior to that work.
Mm.
And if this person hasn't integrated and embodied this new way of being, then energetically they can be pulled back into this new state.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when a man starts to really step into his power and into deeper presence, that presence a man can hold will drop his partner into a deeper feminine space, which can bring up her own old wounds that she needs to address.
Mm.
And so it's not just like a man thing or a woman thing. It's like a human thing, that we're both helping each other on this path as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the path to embodiment looks like this, is that we first we'll learn something, we'll intellectualize it. We might have a concept that we've received through a training or through reading a book or listening to a podcast. And then we'll go into the process of integration. And the integration process might be over a day, might be over a week, might be over a month or over a year.
Yeah.
And we're integrating this intellectual understanding into our life of how does this fit into my life?
Mm.
Like, and you're still consciously making changes for this integration to happen. And then we step into the path of embodiment. And the path of embodiment is that when we're no longer consciously thinking about it, but we've just done it so many times that it becomes an unconscious behavioral trait that is serving us in our highest potential.
Yeah.
And that's when embodiment starts to come through, is embodiment. It was no longer consciously thinking about it.
Yeah.
Embodiment is when you walk into a room and people can just feel your aura. Yeah. They can feel your energy.
Yeah.
And when you've embodied, like if you've come across a really powerful woman, she'll walk into the room and she doesn't have to say anything or dress a certain way, but she'll just hold herself in this, and you'll be like, oh, she's really powerful.
Yeah.
Even a man that's developed really deep presence, he will sit right next to you, and all of a sudden you'll feel yourself soften.
Mm.
Or you feel yourself just want to start saying things over and over again. Or you might be like, oh my God, I haven't told anybody this ever, or I haven't told this to anyone for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And that presence is creating safety, and that's the what I believe the path of embodiment is.
Beautiful. it's interesting too, because just from my own journey of late, so I had, as I explained to you earlier, I had this massive knee reconstruction surgery just before Christmas, and it really, you know, prior to my surgery, I was physically very active, lots of embodiment work, lots of tantra work, you know, yoga, you know, using my body to really shift and move and just come back into harmony, and having to stop all that and come into stillness and actually not even think about doing an embodiment practice, not even thinking about spirituality, you know, well, meditation is that. I had to do a lot of meditation, and I'm still doing meditation, but really I just dropped all that and just found love for life in a very different way. Like I decided it was about connecting with beautiful souls and putting myself out there and being really playful and creative and doing something very different. And the energy inside that, like you talk about vibration, completely shifted. And there wasn't even through embodiment practices. It was just through that, I suppose, coming into stillness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Beautiful.
So I would love to know a bit more about your ceremonies, because I know you're big on holding these cacao ceremonies. And I want the listeners to understand I know the benefits of a cacao ceremony, but what can someone expect when they come to one of your cacao ceremonies? Mm. What's it used for?
Well, a couple of years ago, cacao, I was at someone else's cacao ceremony and the spirit of cacao entered into my being. And she said to me, now is the time for you to provide me to your community and I'll guide you on how I want you to work with me. And she said, you're going to do that through meditation, invocation, breath work, and sacred sounds. And I didn't really know how it was going to kind of play out, but I just listened and I just went with it.
Mm.
And when people come to the ceremonies, when everyone comes in, we smudge them, we cleanse them, and we clear away any kind of old energy that might have been, you know, received from the day or the past week. And we drop them into silence, into a space. And then I just talk to them about cacao, about ceremonial cacao, and the difference between ceremonial cacao and other forms of cacao that people may or may not use. And we go into a meditation of receiving the spirit of cacao, setting an intention. Mm-hmm. So like with all journeys, all ceremonies, intentions or intentional living is of utmost importance.
Mm-hmm.
And setting an intention for what they're wanting to receive from the ceremony. And once we've done that, I will sing Icaros for cacao to invite her into the space, into the beings, into the space to entwine and work with everyone. And then we go into a breath work, just a 10 to 12 minutes of breath, of in through the mouth, out through the mouth. And this style of breath work is just to help the body relax and deepen into their being and allow the medicine of cacao to work deeper and take them deeper in. Once we finish the breath, it's a straight flow into the sacred sound journey. And the sacred sound journey is like sound healing, but like on steroids. It's I use like sacred vows I was taught by my teacher and by spirit as well, and using the did, drums. I've got like five different flutes that I use, guitar and crystal bowls, singing Tibetan bowls, chimes, a range of different instruments to take people on a journey. And so I use the sounds to like open up different energetic pathways in the body and to evoke different emotions and to bring out what needs to be brought out for it for the person to come back into themselves. And cacao is an amazing plant medicine tool. She teaches us to walk the path of the heart. When we think about walking the path of the heart, sometimes we can think that's like a bit light and fluffy and Rambos and all that, but walking the path of the heart is coming true to our authentic self for everything that we are. And that's loving and accepting whatever arises for us in that moment in time. And so when we walk the path of the heart, we can be faced with our own shadows. We can be faced with our own wounds. We can be faced with our own bliss, our own joy. And it's learning to not become attached to pleasure and to not resist pain. and to just love and accept whatever arises.
Yeah.
And in some of the ceremonies, some people are just in tears the whole time, just in their own space, just crying. Some people go into like a full orgasmic state. Some people are just in a blissed out state. You'll feel energy rushing through your system. You'll be feel grounded into the earth. You'll receive guidance from your higher self, receive guidance from cacao. And cacao is this divine light that's coming through to bring us back into harmony. Yeah. And that's harmony within ourselves, harmony with each other, and harmony with the earth. And she works quite subtly as well. And you may find, like, over time that you're just not in that same pattern of thinking. And so we have been running from a couple of years now. I've had people that have come from the very, very start to up till now. And, yeah, running Kikastrum is one of my most favorite things that I get to do. It's just such a beautiful experience, and there's so much tribe, love, and connection and support. And I say to people, like, cacao is used by the Mayan shamans as a way to connect to their gods. But there's been no actual documentation of rituals and cacao ceremonies that were actually done. But these cacao ceremonies are like a modernization of ceremony. And this one style of ceremony that I do was I received from the spirit of cacao to help us bring us back into ourselves, into our heart space. And yeah.
Nice. Where do you get your, or source your cacao from?
I've sourced it from a few different places, but I actually started a ceremonial cacao company called Kaya Cacao, which is a name that had come through a cacao ceremony and through Aya, which we've just kind of birthed, and I'm just selling the ceremonial cacao that we've sourced through our ceremony, so people can come to our ceremonies and buy. But the other cacao that I highly, highly recommend is cacao drinking chocolate, and that's spelt with a K, K-A-K-A-O. You'll find the website at flycacao.com.
Yeah.
And it's an American brand, but they're good friends of ours. And we were quite blessed when we were over in Peru last. We actually linked up with Mac and Mike over there. We went to the cacao farms where they were sourcing their cacao from. We got to see it from the seed to soil to their production. And I'm not sure if you've ever tasted their cacao before, but their cacao is super high vibe cacao. And that's like true ceremonial cacao.
Okay.
When we talk about ceremonial cacao, ceremonial cacao is essentially cacao paste or cacao liquor. But the thing that makes it ceremonial is the place that it's come from. And we also look at the strain of cacao that it comes from. And there's only a couple of native strains of cacao. One's the Chuncho cacao, which comes from a specific place in Peru. Actually, I forgot the name of the place now. Anyways, there's a native strain that hasn't been genetically modified in Quillabamba, sorry. It's a place called Quillabamba in Peru.
Okay.
And that's the, yeah, there's been no genetically modified points of Chuncho, and it's just straight from the land how like nature had intended it. Yeah.
So could someone like myself actually have this cacao like each morning, instead of having like someone might have a coffee or a cup of tea, they could make up a cacao drink and have that for the day? Or is it actually done for like a proper ceremony, like you, what you take people through?
No, for sure. So it's always done with intention. I wouldn't recommend having a ceremonial dose of cacao every single morning.
Yeah. It's quite stimulating the nervous system, isn't it?
Yeah, so we when we sell our packets, we've got like a little recipe that we give people and encourage them to also add in medicinal mushrooms.
Okay.
So we use one. The one that we use the most is a brand called Super Feast.
Mm-hmm. I love this like stuff. Farm.
Yeah. So we use like the Mason's mushroom mix.
Yeah.
And we invite people to use that as well. So if you have any kind of like adrenal fatigue or adrenal conditions, drinking cacao or ceremonial cacao is not the right thing for you. You need to address that in itself. But I will drink cacao every morning. Like I was drinking cacao just before I jumped on this podcast with you. it's you know, like all things, cacao can also become a crutch for people as well.
Mm-hmm.
As a way to, like, if you drink cacao just to get energy, then you know, you're probably using it from the wrong reasons. I'm very much about intentional living and having a reason for everything that I do. And so when I sit with cacao in the morning, you know, I'll sit with my partner and we'll set an intention. We will pull some cards and we'll have a chat. Or we'll sit with cacao and we'll get into a creative, some planning. Are you there?
Yeah, you just cut out there for a moment.
Oh, okay.
I heard that. Your intention setting, pull out the cards and talk and intention setting.
Oh, yeah, and then we'll do it and we'll get into creation mode and we'll write some content, do some social media, put some energy into events, that kind of thing. So, cacao is amazing, an amazing plant medicine to work with.
I love cacao.
But, yeah, it's just the intentional setting as well, you know, so it's just have intention, have a ceremony. And, I mean, people can just sit down and drink every day. Like people put just cacao powder in their smoothies every day, which is fine as well. It's one of the most nutrient-dense superfoods. It's like I think 40 times higher in antioxidants than blueberries. It's one of the highest forms of magnesium. It's one of the chemicals in it is anandamide, which is like known as the bliss chemical. It's got amazing properties in it, physically, emotionally, energetically, spiritually. It's absolutely incredible. But one of the reasons why I only run ceremonies, I do them like once a month or every 5 weeks, purely for the integration of the energy for people after ceremonies. So I could probably run them like weekly or fortnightly if I wanted to, but giving respect and honor to the spirit and to people's integration and embodiment, just once a month, 5 weeks, sometimes 6 weeks, like I'll feel into the energy of the group and I'll be like, oh, the session needs to be 6 weeks and I won't do it.
So cool. All your work is predominantly out of Perth. Do you plan on doing a bit of an Australian tour, like coming to Melbourne or any of the other states anytime soon?
Yeah, so Melbourne's probably actually been the most city that people have asked us to come to hold ceremony, hold our ceremonies. So I was looking at doing it at the Prana House yoga studio.
Yeah.
But we were actually, calling in, manifesting someone to host us over there or in any of the cities. So if you're listening and you want to host one of our ceremonies and you have a community that you want to link us to, then let me know because we're looking for people to host us. So we're looking at Melbourne, Gold Coast, Brisbane, Sydney. So definitely coming over and then bringing the men's work as well at a different point too.
Let's talk further offline. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, sweet. Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And, yeah.
Okay. So watch your space, my Burnians and Sydney Siders and whoever out there. And, so as we know, the foundation of this work that we do, Tim, is all about self-love. I would love to know some of your rituals or practices to come back into self-love or self-pleasure, anything that's going to come back into yourself.
One thing I love doing is breathing really deep into my belly. breathing below my belly button to my hara, and breathing deep down into my legs, into my cock, and just breathing so deep into myself that I can feel my energy drop deep into my being. And then when I'm there, I love to breathe into my belly and then breathing up to my heart space and just connect those together. And then just being present with whatever's there. And I've done so many self-love practices over the years. And the ones that I've found the most beneficial is just learning to love whatever arises up within myself and accepting everything that happens. And a big part for me of self-love is radical responsibility and ownership. And taking complete control and ownership and responsibility of everything that happens in my life. And by doing so, that's creating love within myself. I also love eye gazing in the mirror and just standing, breathing into my belly as I'm connecting myself into the mirror. Another thing I do for self-love is I love playing music. I just go into a transcended state when I create music. And when I play, I'm playing from my heart and my soul. So as I'm doing that, I'm just filling myself up with my heart and with my soul.
So yummy. What's your favorite part of the day?
Mornings for sure. Mornings and... maybe nighttime as well. Yeah, probably mornings and nighttime.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Cool. Yeah. And if there's something that perhaps people don't know about you, Tim, what would that be?
They don't know about me. I'm not too sure.
You're an open.
I feel like I'm so open and transparent.
You are, yeah.
I just like always say what's on my mind. Always ask for what I need.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I know.
Was like, ask me anything and I'll tell you.
Yeah, I love it. Cool. Who have been the biggest influences in your life? The teachers.
Biggest influences. One would definitely be my parents. And especially my mum in my own spiritual development. For a couple of years, she took off the mum hat and was just mentoring. And she was super, super strict with me. And like at the start, I'd always want to like rush, and she'd just always tell me I wasn't ready yet. And she was just really, I mean, I'm so thankful for that, because that's why, you know, the spaces can be held so much sacredness now. Plants have definitely been massive influence in my life. It's hard to kind of say one or two, because there's been so many influences in my life. In my old life, my old coach, his name's Darren Reese. He runs a gym, a very successful Muay Thai gym called Riddler's Gym. And he was a massive influence in my life in that point in time. And, you know, he's the one that taught me about controlled aggression and to be humble, to be successful, to, you know, work hard, be dedicated. Actually, everyone that was at that gym when I first went there, like a core crew of fires or massive influences in my life in that time. My partner has been a massive influence as well. And everyone that comes to ceremony, everyone that comes to our men's work, they all teach me in some way or form. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. I would love to know how you define sensuality.
Sensuality. To me, sensuality is just dropping deep into yourself and allowing yourself to feel everything through all your senses, through your touch, through your smell, through the movement of your body, and just coming into this it's like a heightened state of being where you can really just connect deep within yourself. And if there's somebody else involved, and you can connect to a deeper place with them, and you can connect deep with spirit as well in that space. And I find that sensuality is like becoming one with all. And it's just, you know, flowing and merging and
yeah. Just close my eyes as you walked me through that, and I really felt all your sensuality that you have embodied and still yet to embody. I still feel that, you know, you are on a journey. You know, you are traveling down this really potent, magical path, and it's just a start for you. So I can't wait to feel into what our sensuality is, how else it's going to start to come up in your life.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you. Deeply received.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So much gratitude to have you on the show and speak to you so openly. And you are such a humble man. And, you know, looking at you, your physique, you obviously have that real masculine body, that strength, that warrior body, but you really embody that divine masculine and that softness and that presence and the consciousness. I feel all that. And I can see why you are a very popular man in the community. I can't wait to meet you and do some work with you in the near future. I actually feel that it's coming up strongly for me.
Sure.
Just dropped my mic. And I will add everything in the show notes. You know, you're on social media, obviously you're very active on social media. That's what I love about you. I definitely have some resistance being on social media so much. I'm just trying to, you know, go through a bit of a detox with that. You've really got to create space to be on that. But I know the space that you've created is so so authentic and genuine. So for that, I'm truly grateful.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I was adding one more thing. I've got to say that next men's immersion is going to be in Bali. And it's April 8th to the 14th. It's North Bali. And it's called The Brave, and it's a rite of passage for men. So The Brave, and it's gone to some deep somatic releasing, going on to the hero's journey, dropping deep into that masculine space, and doing some practices to shift from that boy mentality into that man mentality, because the world is filled with failed initiates, failed initiations into manhood.
Yeah.
So this is first one I'm doing over in Bali, so I'm super pumped. I've got an amazing support team that's coming over with me. So that's on Facebook and on my website as well. So if you're feeling the call, jump on, because it's going to be absolutely incredible.
Ah, yes. So all you men listening out there, check it out. I will, as I mentioned, I'll put everything in the show notes so they can refer to this very easily. What a beautiful way to end this very heartfelt conversation with you, Tim.
Thank you. Look forward to sharing space again with you, Sharon. It's amazing.
Absolutely. Thank you, beautiful man.
Thank you.
There you have it, the beautiful warrior himself, reclaiming the masculine. Such an inspiration to many people, and I'm so pleased I came across him and have been following his work and his passion. I can see, as I mentioned, why he's so popular in the community, and for all the men out there, I highly encourage you to connect with Tim and find out a bit about his workshops. And I know he has an upcoming retreat in Bali. If I was a man, I'd be diving deep and doing this work. I think it's so powerful for any man to come into this deep transformational work, you know, coming back to your true essence as a man, your inner warrior. So on that note, I'm going to say farewell and excited that the first episode is done for the year, and looking forward to getting a lot more interesting guests on the show. My next guest is actually quite a spiritual soul. She is a healer. She is a clairvoyant. She has worked with me for a number of years. She has done a lot of healing on me and read my cards and been very accurate and someone I turn to when I really need some guidance in my life. So I look forward to bringing Holly onto the show. Holly Jones will be here shortly on my show. I think she will be the next one on here. I actually did have someone else lined up, but we've had to reschedule for after the Rainbow Festival. As always, much love, a lot of kisses, gratitude, and blessings to you all. Mwah.